Hey friendos, I'm Danny B, and welcome to Retrostalgia, critical analysis of every book, TV show, movie, and video game that I've always been told that I needed in my life. Today, I'll be taking a look at River's Edge. Let's get going, man! Welcome back to Retrostalgia. Let's jump right in on this. I don't really have any updates. Just a quick little disclaimer before I talk about this movie. This movie wasn't originally on my list of things that I wanted to watch or anything like that. I actually didn't even know that this movie existed until about a week ago. My good friend Kristen, she hosts CoffeeCast, which you can find on Spotify and everywhere else, all that jazz. She did a mini episode about a week ago talking about the true crime aspect of this movie. This movie is actually based on a true story, an actual real true crime. So if you're interested in that side of things, I would definitely suggest going and listening to her little mini episode about this first before we talk about the movie. And if you haven't seen the movie, I would definitely suggest going and listening to that episode before you watch the movie. It gives you a bit more context as to what's going on, and I just think she did a really good job covering the true crime part of it. So now let's get into the movie. River's Edge was released May 8th, 1987, about 7 years before I was born. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has an 86% rating, and as I mentioned before, this is based on a true story. It's about a group of apathetic high school students that learn that a friend has killed his girlfriend, and after they are shown the body, they decline to inform the police about it, which is also what happened, the true crime side of things, the story that this movie was based on. A guy did kill his girlfriend and told people about it. They didn't believe him. He showed them the body and they just kept showing it to more kids and more kids. And no one did or said anything about it. They just didn't want to get him in trouble, I guess, or something like that. So the fact that this is based on a true crime is one of the things that I actually really liked about this movie. I thought that it would be an interesting plot all on its own, but the fact that it is based on a real true story really just added to the creepiness of this movie that it does have at some times, even though it's a pretty funny movie that doesn't really take itself too seriously. It still has some serious bits to it. The actress who plays the victim in this movie, her name is Jamie, is the character's name. There's only one bit in this movie in which we see her alive, which is the part that depicts her, well, dying, for lack of a better word. And the rest of the time that we see her in the movie, she is dead. And this is not a prop. This is not some weird dummy that they've made. No, this is an actual girl playing a dead body throughout this entire movie, which I just have to give her major props because I think that would be so difficult and God, she must have been so cold. It's great. Her performance was wonderful. I watched this movie twice, and the second time through, I kept trying to see if I could see her breathing or moving or anything like that, and no, she looked dead. It's creepy and wonderful, and I greatly enjoyed that part of the movie. Her performance was just fantastic, 10 out of 10. Everyone throughout this entire movie, also kind of like the true crime part of it, like what happened in real life, everyone in this movie is kind of more or less nonchalant about death. No one really seems too butthurt or too upset that this girl is now dead. I mean, John, the guy who killed her, he does seem to feel some remorse, at least at the beginning, though it sort of seems more like he didn't think that killing her would be something that he would actually do until he did it. So I think he just surprised himself, I suppose. It wasn't really that he felt guilty or that he was sad that she was gone or anything like that. I think he was just taken aback by his own actions. Overall, everyone throughout the movie is just very apathetic towards the idea of death, more or less. Real quick, I do want to say that while I'm talking about this movie, I do have some paper notes. So if you hear any rustling or anything like that, I'll try and cut it all out in post. But if you hear any of that sound, that's what it is. My bedroom that I record in is not haunted or anything. At least, probably not. The little kid brother, Tim, in this movie, I found him to be a really interesting character. I kind of hate him and I kind of love him. He has these moments throughout the movie that just kind of go back and forth for me. He's the first character that we see in the movie. He's standing on a bridge over by where the body actually is. He has his sister's doll and throws it over the bridge just to be an asshole, I guess. But I like his look. I think the one sword dangling earring was a choice accessory for his outfit. It was fantastic. Tim also is just very, he doesn't care, I guess. I know it's the 80s, but towards the beginning of this movie, he steals some beer from a local convenience store so that he can talk to John, who's the one who killed Jamie. He saw him by the body earlier that day. He steals some beer for him, and in return for stealing the beer for him, he asks him for some weed for a joint. There's a lot of talk of weed and getting high and joints and stuff in this movie, so if that makes you uncomfortable, then you probably don't want to watch this movie. But he's so desperate for a joint that he hops into this complete stranger's car. I mean, he may not be a complete stranger, he is a friend of his older brother's. And they're all in high school, so maybe he's seen them around before, but it's still just kind of odd. One, that Tim is like running around super early in the morning, and two, that he would just hop into this guy's car so that they can go get some weed. And then while he's in the car, he's like looking around and stuff, and he finds a pair of lacy underwear on the floorboard and just thinks that John is like radical. I gotta love the like 80s slang and stuff that's in this movie. He thinks he's cool because he's older and has underwear in his car, so of course he's had sex with a girl. So, of course, that makes you cool in the eyes of a little kid. I mean, he's not little, he's like 12, but still, he's pretty young. Tim's friend throughout the movie, I don't know if they ever actually mention his name or anything like that, but this dude is a ride or die bitch. He will follow Tim to the end of the world, which is just so cool to me. Tim gets really upset later on in the movie because his brother Matt punches him, and so he decides that he's going to kill his older brother. And Tim's friend just goes along with it. He's like, yeah, sure, let's go get a gun. Let's go. Let's do this thing. He doesn't really talk too much throughout the movie, but he goes along with it. There's no arguing. There's no trying to persuade Tim not to do this. He's just like, yeah, sure. Okay, let's go. So good on him for being like a really good friend, I guess. One of the other things that I couldn't take seriously throughout this movie, aside from how often they talk about getting high, is the character Lane is played by a young Crispin Glover. His accent throughout this entire movie, I don't know if he actually talked like that or if it was an accent that he put on for this movie, but his accent, the way he talks throughout this entire production, is just so kind of almost 80s surfer dude, and it's just so funny to me. I couldn't stop laughing anytime he said anything. Like he tries to be so serious, but when you're like, come on, man, like I can't take you seriously. That's just not how people talk, and that's just not, it just doesn't sound good. So I really enjoyed him. I also thought that Matt and his group of friends were a very interesting group. They're always like smoking joints and cigarettes and stuff. The character. He's also really chill. I really enjoyed his character. He's played by Keanu Reeves in one of his like earliest, if not like first roles that he ever was in. He's a really cool dude. He is really nice to his younger sister Kim, especially because Tim is a complete asshole to her. He helps her prepare a funeral for the doll that Tim drowned at the beginning of the movie. And overall, he just really cares about her, especially when it seems like no one else does. Even the mom doesn't really seem to care about her. The mom doesn't really seem to care about any of them except for how much trouble they seem to put her through, I suppose. Her main concern throughout the entire movie is mostly Tim, as well as the guy who is renting a room in their house, who I think his name is actually Jim. There are a lot of like M names in this movie. She's a really bad mother, but I'll talk about that later, because right now I want to talk about all of the things that I liked about this movie. I thought it was interesting, and I greatly enjoyed how they can say fuck in class and just like say exactly what they're thinking. Even the teacher cusses at the students, which I've mentioned before, I think in the previous episode, how I don't really believe in like cuss words and right or wrong words to say in general. So I thought that that inclusion in the movie was just really cool, and this is a movie that was made in the 80s, so I wonder if it's really a product of its time. Like, is that actually how high school was, 20 years ago? No, not 20. It's older than me. 30 years ago? Oh god. I think I've also mentioned it before, but I am still one of those people who is constantly convinced that it's still 2010. 2020 is next year, and I still don't believe that it's real. I still think it's 2010, so 1987 seems like 23 years ago, when in fact it's been longer than that. It's been like 33 years. So, yeah. Matt's little sister Kim, who I was just talking about, I also liked her. I think she was kind of a cool kid. It sucked how she gets treated throughout this movie and the things that she ends up like seeing and hearing. It's not great. That's not a great environment for a kid, but she's really nice to her big brother Matt because he's really nice to her. I giggled every time that she used the excuse that Matt had to go buy an egg as a way to tell people that he wasn't home. Like, who goes to just buy one egg? That was so funny. Back to Matt's group of friends. So his friend John, you find out in the movie, his name is not actually John, his name is Samson, which, okay, that's an interesting choice for a name. I feel like I've mainly heard that as a last name, but anyways, his last name is Tollett, and so the kids make a nickname for him from that. So Tollett is like toilet, because obviously kids are gonna make that kind of connection. And then from toilet, they call him John, because John is another word for toilet. So not exactly the most creative nickname, because you do end up calling him a normal name, but I did think that that was a funny bit to include in the movie. A couple small things that I'm glad that they included in the movie is that at one point they're at an arcade for a bit, and I don't know about you, but arcades are, they're one of the things that I would consider my shit. Arcades are so cool. I love going to arcades. I loved working in arcades, even though I hated it because it was customer service. I still greatly enjoy it. I've spent, let's see, 2012 to about 2017. So it's been about 4.5, nearly 5 years working in arcades. So even though I didn't really go to many arcades as a kid, they're still always really nostalgic for me, especially 80s looking arcades with like neon and stuff, which, if you pay attention to the podcast, then you will have noticed that the logo for Retrostalgia, the font is, I hope I got the point across, but the font is supposed to be like a neon sign that says Retrostalgia. It's supposed to be neon. It's a little hard to read in the Halloween version of the logo that I have up on the episodes right now, but after October, I'm going to go back to the regular logo, except that I've, in creating the Halloween logo, I've updated the regular logo, and so it'll be a bit easier to read and stuff like that. I really enjoy the way that the regular logo looks right now, and I'm excited to use it once October is over, even though I really don't want October to be over as my favorite month of the year. But I'm really getting off track here. Ellie is not really a character in this movie. She is in quite a few scenes. The guy that they always get weed from, his name is Feck, which with Crispin Glover's accents always sounded like he was saying Feck. So that made me laugh again and again because although this movie is not necessarily funny, it's funny. At least it was for me, seeing it now for the first time 22 years after it came out. No, is that wrong? Is that right? No. Oh God, I can't do math. 32 years after it came out. Yes, 32 years. It's a funny movie to me, even though it's not really a comedy. It's not trying to be funny, but I thought it was hilarious. Ellie is a blow-up doll that Feck has. She is treated kind of more or less like a real person. Like, he knows that she's a blow-up doll, but he, like, dances with her and eats with her and stuff like that. It's kind of cute, kind of creepy, but a good addition to the movie, I think. So, more or less, that kind of sums up all the things that I thought about talking about this movie, about River's Edge, that stood out to me as things that I really enjoyed. So, before we go on to the stuff that I didn't really care about, I want to talk a little bit about Anchor, as well as I want to talk about another podcast that I've been really into, but I'm actually going to let them tell you about the podcast. So we'll be right back in just a few minutes.
Sex is natural and sex is healthy. But what happens when it suddenly all goes wrong? I'm your host, Angela.
And I'm your host, Pascal.
And we are the Sexins Podcast,
where we discuss all sorts of sexual accidents, whether it be getting anal beads stuck,
or your sister walking in on you as your other half suddenly comes.
Or how about your cat thinking your balls are a plaything?
So join us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.fm,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
And be sure to subscribe.
Welcome back to Retrostalgia. Thank you for enduring ads. I know ads suck so much, but there are just so many cool podcasts that I want to share with you guys. And if they want to talk about themselves so that I don't have to, then I'm more than happy to include them in my episode. I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time with ads, but they really help me out. They really help out other podcasts. So if you're still listening, thank you. I appreciate you like so much. Like so much. Just come here so I can give you a hug through the internet. I just want to squish your little face. Thank you. You're so nice. But anyways, let's get back to talking about River's Edge. So now that we've talked about the good stuff, let's talk about the bad stuff. As I mentioned before, the mother of Tim, Matt, and Kim in this movie, she is just a terrible mom all around. It seems like she's never really there. If she's not there, it doesn't seem like there's a babysitter for Kim or anything. She's constantly yelling either at the kids or the, I guess, roommate who lives with them, which was kind of like a weird tiny subplot to include in the movie, but whatever. I didn't write this movie. She doesn't really seem to care about the kids all that much. She cares about the fact that Tim doesn't come home a lot of the time. She seems really upset by that, but more or less, it seems like she doesn't necessarily want to be a mom. And in fact, there's one point in the movie in which she says that she gives up being a mom and that the kids were all mistakes anyways. It's a very dramatic part of the movie, and it seems like she kind of genuinely means it. So that's a great role model. This movie, I believe, is a bit more a product of its time. There are definitely some more rights for women and stuff during this time. They're taken a bit more seriously, but it's still not as technically progressive as things are today. There's a line in the movie in which I believe Lane is trying to console John, or someone's trying to console John, and they say, "Women are evil. You had to kill her." So that's great. Thanks. I really appreciate that, being told that I'm evil, so obviously I deserve to be killed, right? The one and only teacher, I believe, that we see throughout this entire movie, Not only does he yell at his class, but he is also one of the more sexist people in this movie. He's talking to the class about something, and he says something along the lines of, "Although women have more rights nowadays, which is cool, you're still expected to have careers and then eventually a husband and kids." So, one, it's saying, well, if you're not going to be a stay-at-home mom, then you need to have a job, and you only need to have a job until you get married, and then you need to have kids. So that's a great example for women. Thank you for that. There's also mention of rape throughout this movie. It's one of the precursors to Jamie's death, in fact. There's one part in the movie in which Meg and Clarissa, the two girls of the friend group, are walking and they're talking about a couple of the other guys in the group, and they make a joke about getting raped, and then they giggle, almost as if saying that it would be a compliment or something like that if one of the guys in their group wanted to rape them. So that's problematic, to say the least. Being raped is not a compliment, so I hope no one out there thinks that. If you're into consensual non-consent, then that's fine. Just don't rape anyone against their will. That's not flattering. That's not cool. To be quite honest, and this is a thing about myself that I'm not exactly sure I've ever shared with anyone. When I was younger, I was a bit smaller than I was now, but I was still pretty fat. I used to have to work downtown where I live, and I would get off at night and I would have to walk from where I live to my car, which would be a good like 10, maybe 15 minutes if I was being slow, walk downtown in the dark by myself. I used to feel that although that could be a risk, you know, I had a pretty high risk of maybe getting attacked or something like that. I never really thought about the fact that I could be raped, because I always thought that no one would want to rape me, that no one would be so desperate that they would rape someone like me because I wouldn't be attractive enough. So, long story short, rape is not a compliment. Please don't make it a compliment or joke about it in that sort of light. It's not a good thing, it's a bad thing, and I'm gonna stop talking about it now, so. Speaking of being overweight, there is a bit of, it's not really fat phobia, but it's uncomfortableness about being fat. So they talk about moving Jamie's body once the whole friend group is shown where the body is by the river's edge. In fact, that's probably where they got the name. Lane makes a point about burying the body, or at least moving it so it's not just out in the open and being found. John comments that she's heavy, like she's too heavy to move. And if you watch this movie, or if you even see just like a still of the girl who played Jamie, she's really thin. You can like see her ribs when she's laying down along the edge of the river. So she's not fat. She's not overweight in any way, shape, or form. And the fact that she's referred to as heavy, even smaller girls, even thinner girls, are gonna be probably at least 100 pounds, and that's not exactly fun to carry, but they're also a friend group of like 6 people, so they could easily move the body if they tried to. I understand that no one probably wants to touch the dead body, and that's cool, but the excuse that she's too heavy is not really a good excuse. Another part of this movie that made me really uncomfortable was after Matt calls the police and they find Jamie's body. He gets questioned by the police because when they go to find her body, she's no longer just laying by the riverbank. Her body is found in the river, and it's obvious that someone had pushed her or rolled her down the hill to get her into the water in an attempt to dispose of the body, I guess. Which is funny to me because Lane is the one who ends up doing that, and all I could think was, Lane, didn't your mom ever teach you that bodies float? You know, whenever they talk about hiding a body in the water, they always say to like tie a cinder block to its leg or something like that. Because unless you're really dense as a person, unless you have a lot of muscle, you're probably gonna float. As I've said before, I'm a pretty big person, and fat floats, so I have no problem with it. But anyways, once they recover Jamie's body, they go back to the police station, and this officer berates Matt about his involvement in this. He's yelling and screaming at him and accusing him of so much. It's disturbing and a little gross, and it just made me really uncomfortable, that entire scene. Like, that cop is such a fucking asshole. Can't he just calm down? I know that cops have the right to get a confession or information out of people basically in any way that they can think of. They can lie to them, they can yell at them, what, you know, that sort of thing. That's fine. But it almost seemed like this cop had some sort of vendetta, I guess, against Matt, which was just really, really stupid. He was a major asshole, and so that part of the movie was uncomfortable to watch. For the most part, that's pretty much most of this movie that I really didn't like. So from here, I want to just talk about some of the bits of the movie that I found sort of confusing or just made me ask a question and I didn't really get any answers or anything to. So I want to just kind of like start from the beginning and go to the end to just ask all the questions about what's going on. This isn't going to make too much sense if you haven't seen the movie, I guess. Or it might. We'll see. Alright, so starting from the beginning of the movie, one of the questions I found myself asking was, how long was Tim standing on the bridge before he threw the doll over the side? Did he hear or see the murder happening? Did he hear or see the rape? Did he hear or see anything that happened before John starts doing this weird, like, whooping thing? He's just like sort of yelling, I guess, as a form of emotional release or something like that, while he's like smoking either a joint or a cigarette or something after he's committed this murder. How much of that did Tim actually play privy to? How much of that did he actually get to experience? Did he just show up on the bridge after the fact while John was just sitting there trying to come to terms with what happened? That's never answered. I also want to know more about Feck. Who is this guy really? How did he get in contact with these teenagers who just want to smoke pot, like, all day? Why does he give them pot for free? As long as they're his, like, quote-unquote friends. As long as they stop by and say hi and see how he's doing. Is that how he gets his groceries? Like, here's some money, or here, go get me some groceries, I'll pay you back when you come back with some pot. Maybe that's how he's been living for the past 5 years. But either way, this dude's kind of old. He's got like a full head of gray hair. So what is he doing hanging out with these teenagers? It's kind of a weird relationship that Feck and the friend group have, that they don't really talk about at all throughout this movie, but like they all know Feck, or at least like John and Lane do. I don't think anyone else really interacts with him that much. When they go to school, there's only one teacher that you ever get to see, and it's this chauvinistic asshole of a dude. I have no idea what he's even teaching. Every time they do actually show the class, he's never talking about math or anything in particular. I think he's either a history teacher or English teacher. Those are really the only subjects that I can think of that have a more discussive atmosphere to them, I guess I could say. They never really say what he teaches, just that Clarissa never wants to miss one of his classes. Which raises another point for me. What is the relationship between Clarissa and this teacher? Like, obviously she's super into him. Wait, dude, choose some better guys, man. This dude sucks. This dude really sucks. The first time that you see them go to his class, she stays after to talk to him, I guess. And it ends with her, like, walking up to his desk and sort of, like, smiling at him, you know, in that, like, hey, sort of way. And then it cuts to something else, and I don't think they ever explain what happened there, like, if they actually did anything, or if she tried and he said no or whatever. But she still is persistent about going to his class every day. So who knows what their relationship is. It may just be like a giant crush and he's like, whoa, bitch, you're like 16, back off. I don't know. He seems like the kind of skeevy asshole that would probably prey on someone like Clarissa though. Next, we see the squad going to the burger joint in town, whatever kind of place this is, to talk to Lane's older brother. He has a truck which can hold a lot more people than Lane's car can, and I'm assuming the river that Jamie's body is at is kind of far, so they need his truck so that they can all go and look at the body, because none of them believe that John actually killed Jamie. Lane goes to this place to try and convince his brother to let him borrow the truck, and he tries to make it like a really big point that he shouldn't even be talking to his brother right now, that at any minute he could lose his job or whatever, except that you can hear their conversation like echoing off the walls in this place. They're talking really loudly, even though none of the other people in the restaurant seem to really notice what's going on. They're having a really loud conversation. Not to mention, before they cut to them all going to the river in his older brother's car, or truck, I mean. Basically, I just want to know, what did Lane do to convince Mai to take them to the river's edge? It's never explained. I don't understand why he even bothers. I guess maybe he wants to see a dead body. That's the only thing I can really think of. But again, he makes it a big point, like he's going to get fired. He's like, do you really want me to just leave and get fired in the middle of my shift? Except that he goes back afterwards. Like, if you honestly thought you would get fired for doing something like that, I don't think you would actually go back. But I think I have a little bit more common sense than most people, and but I don't know, maybe his manager was a bit more lenient than he let on. So earlier I talked about how the actress who plays Jamie is playing Jamie. She's actually laying there in all the scenes, as far as I'm aware at least. It made me wonder about the dead discoloration of her body. Obviously it's like makeup and stuff, and she's wearing contacts, I'm sure, to make her eyes look all milky and stuff like that. And this may be gross, but I found myself wondering, obviously they could make her lips look more blue and less like they had blood in them, but I kind of have to wonder about her nipples. Like, I wonder if they used makeup or anything like that to discolor them, which would be a little awkward for her, I think, or if that's just something that they had to edit in post. Which would also be really awkward, like, hey, so what did you do at work today? Oh, I'm working on this new movie, and my job is to frame by frame go through the movie and discolor this girl's nipples because she's not actually dead, but we couldn't, like, put makeup on her nipples. So I have to, like, make them look, like, darker and less pink and stuff. Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, that would just be a weird job. But I wonder about weird shit like that, so I'm sorry. And that's basically it. This movie didn't really have too much to it. It was a pretty simple story about a group of high school kids whose friend kills his girlfriend, and they don't believe him, so he takes them to see the body because he's a fucking psychopath. And everything kind of ends up resolved, more or less. It leaves off at a really weird point, but other than that, you know, it's a pretty straightforward movie, I suppose. It, you know, it's a teen movie. There's drinking, there's drugs and getting high, there's teenage sex, you know. It's all of the good stuff that you want. There's a gun, there's death. It basically checks all your typical boxes, I suppose. I don't know, stream it somewhere, find it in a dollar DVD bin at your local trade-in place if you really want to see it. Like I said, it's not a bad movie. It's definitely something you might want to watch once, but I don't think it's something that you ever be like, oh man, we should totally watch River's Edge. That's what we should do on Friday. Let's order some pizza and watch River's Edge. It might be a movie to get high to. I don't know. I've never been high, so if anyone can give me an answer on that, then cool. I would appreciate it, and I'll let you guys know if anyone answers me on that. So now that I've finally taken the time to watch River's Edge, I have a recommendation for you. This week, I would like to recommend. So this week, my recommendation for you guys, I kind of had a hard time picking what I wanted to tell you to take a look at. I usually try to fit my recommendation to the subject matter for my episode, so I try and do something in a similar vein. So I wanted to recommend a movie that was based off of actual events, based off of a true story. And one of my favorite movies from my childhood is actually based off of actual people and actual events that took place. If you've never seen The First Wives Club, I genuinely love that movie. It is about a group of three women who are all getting divorced. They're all the first wives of these men. All these men are leaving or have left them for younger women. And so they are actually all friends from college, I think, college or high school. And so they band together and they form this like women's group. And it's just a good like feminism power movie. And I think it's set in either the 80s or the 90s, I don't remember. So the fashion is pretty on point for the time. But I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It's just one of those movies that just made me really happy as a kid. It's hilarious, and I loved seeing these women come from a place that was probably one of the lowest points of their lives and rising up to become these wonderful, powerful women. If that sounds like anything you might be interested in, please find somewhere to watch The First Wives Club. I don't know where you can find it right now, unfortunately, because I'm being lazy and I'm not looking it up, but if you want to watch it, please look it up. It's really good. I can't give the movie enough praises. I haven't seen it in quite a while, so I'm not exactly sure how it's aged, but that's kind of the fun of it. It's kind of like half the point of this podcast is just seeing how terribly things have aged. So if you're curious to see how horribly it's aged, then go watch it. And that concludes this week's episode of Retrostalgia. If you have any suggestions or recommendations for me, you can email the pod directly at retrostalgiapod@gmail.com or use the contact form on our website. You can also follow the pod on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at RetrostalgiaPod. If you're bored, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It doesn't really matter what it says, I just want to feed the stupid, hungry iTunes algorithm. But if you want, you can actually leave me a review and tell me what you think of this episode and of the show. I would also appreciate it if you left me a review on Podchaser. You can review my pod in general, or you can go episode by episode and rate each individual one, which is so cool. But anyways, please let me know what else you would like to see from the pod. If you like this, cool, send it to someone who would enjoy it. If you hated this, also cool, send it to someone who will make fun of me with you. Either way, I'll see you again next week for episode 7. Until then, I'm Danny B, reminding you to be kind, please rewind. I'll see you soon. Bye!